You're listening to the Crosswalk Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in to our channel. If you guys haven't already, or if you guys are new to the channel, then please hit that like button or maybe that subscribe button so that we can help further get the gospel out to other people. We want to thank you guys for joining in, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. What's going on, guys, and welcome back to Crosswalk, where real faith meets real life. Man, we are excited to have you guys back. Thank you guys for joining in with us and picking us to listen to for your Christian wants and needs. Last week, we talked about, was it Philippians last week?
Colossians was the last one, and then Colossians right before it.
And so we've been kind of going through this like book by book series. We've been in the New Testament here lately, and we've just been cracking down on some of these smaller books. But just because they're small don't mean they're not big. I mean, they got so much good, rich stuff in them. Mm-hmm. Hope you guys are following along with us, maybe reading through the book of Colossians and Philippians. Today, we're going to be in James, which happens to be perfect because we don't need a tagline for what we're going to be talking today because you guys already heard it, okay? Faith meets real life. And there's no better book for it than James, okay? Mm-hmm. And so we're excited to go through this with you. I think we're going to jump straight into it today.
You could park right here for a long time in Christianity. Just looking at how to live the Christian life, you could park here in James and just read. And he'd have an answer for so many of life's issues.
Well, and we've actually talked about it a little bit before. I mean, we've mentioned it slowly.
We have. We've referenced this letter
through the podcast, you know, because this book has been such a foundational presence just to the podcast itself. It's been a great outlier, and so this has been our reference. This has been our goal, and this has been what we've been looking at and trying to achieve. And so I think it's a perfect thing for today's age and time because James is real, okay? James likes to get to it. He likes to cut to the chase. Mm-hmm. And he gets real with you. He makes it really, really simplified and makes it real. And I think that that's something that we need in today's world because, we experience a loss of realness, you know what I mean, with social media mm-hmm. and with, I mean, as Donald Trump would say, you know, fake news. But if we got fake news, fake media.
But not on Twitter anymore.
Twitter anymore because he's banned and blocked on YouTube. And
can't find him on TikTok anymore.
But it's all fake, you know, and we live, you know, fake lives, fake personas. In today's age and time, there's so much technology, we can put on anything we want to be. We can be anybody we want to be, you know, and so we lose sight of what's real in this world sometimes.
Oh, yeah. We're in a society now that people have reshaped into where the individual is the highest form of truth. Like yourself and who you say, who you believe you are on the inside needs to actualize on the outside. And if society doesn't accept it and celebrate it,
they're wrong.
And so that just
repeats the cycle of there is no truth, there is no right, there is no wrong. Yeah. Everything is just a big mixture of blame.
Oh yeah, it becomes so plastic.
Exactly. It's a plastic facade.
Like how I feel on Tuesday is my ultimate reality, but it could be a different ultimate reality by the next Wednesday.
Absolutely. And it's a joke, really, but it's sad at the same time because there are people that, you know, I mean, these are our lives, these are people's lives. And they're not. There's nothing real to it. There's nothing tangible to it. There's nothing mm-hmm. that's gonna stick to it. And the saddest part about it is this isn't just something that we see in the secular world. We see this right here in church. We see this right here in our Christian world, and our brothers and our sisters is getting lost in this fact of what's real. I mean, because we know God's real, but man, what exactly does God's truth say about my life? What exactly does God's truth say about my direction? And so we lose fact of what's real for even our Christian lives, and it can get really hard.
I think we have a tendency to just basically just jump into a culture. We just drop right into it because it's what we're born into, and we just kind of swim through it like fish in water and pay no attention to it and never really question how we got here.
Right, yeah. I mean,
we never really examine what led us to this point, what led us to the point that, you know, that we just intuitively kind of understand all the things that culture throws at us and says mm-hmm. and don't question them biblically.
Right. Or at all, for that matter. I mean,
yeah, at all.
It would be nice if we could run it through a biblical filter, obviously, but it's like at this point, it's like, just nothing gets questioned. It's just, if you throw it out there, if you can make it, if you can see it, if you can believe it, then that's good enough for you. Or that's good enough for everybody else. And that's that's their truth for the day, like you said. I mean, it can be your, it can be literally your entire universe. Everything that you know, love, and care about can be one thing on Tuesday, and Wednesday you can change it to be something. You can be in a total different universe Wednesday, and it just doesn't make sense. It's not real, and so we need something tangible that we can hold on to. And so I think that this is a perfect way to transition from our Colossians, our Philippians study, going directly into James, and we're like. Because we learned from Paul then, and we experienced James here, which is such a different teacher in a way from what he the way he writes.
Well, and I like that you said we need something tangible, something to hang on to, because things drastically change. You look, all right, so this you may, you know, if you're listening and you're very familiar with the scriptures, you may know this, but this James that wrote this letter was the brother of Jesus.
Right.
And so you literally have somebody who grew up with Jesus. And it's like, what would it, as Andy Stanley says, what would it take for you to be convinced that your brother was God?
Mm-hmm. I have a brother, so that would be
right. And I have three brothers, and I'm like, ain't no way I'm ever going to believe that they're even like high ranking with God. No, you know, I'm just like, let alone that they're the Son of God, like the Savior of the world.
Absolutely,
and so. James' whole world shifted, and just fun little tidbit here. James wasn't his real name. His name would have actually been Jacob.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Because James is the Anglo-Saxon kind of version of the name Jacob.
Right.
And so to avoid confusion with the Old Testament Jacob, they went ahead and named him the Anglo-Saxon version of the name Jacob, and so it's James. So if your name is James... like Pastor James.
Shout out
to Pastor James. We love you, but unfortunately, you know, the name James isn't actually in the Bible. And if your name is Jacob, this is your day.
It is.
But his whole world shifted and changed. You know, his brother grows up and starts acting weird by their standards and doing crazy things. And, you know, all of a sudden, he gets the attention of the Pharisees and all the religious leaders and of the Romans eventually because of that. And the next thing you know, his brother is crucified. And he's like, man, all of this hoopla for what? And if you're at a point where you're like, man, I'm real skeptical of this whole Christianity thing, well, you're in good company because so was James. Mm. Like,
well, and James,
1 Corinthians 15:7 says that, like, Jesus appeared to James after his resurrection.
Right.
Like, that's what it took for him to be convinced, was seeing a resurrected Jesus. So you're literally talking about the sibling of Jesus growing up and coming to the belief that his brother was God and was resurrected from the dead. And I think that's why he was so convinced of it and why he became the leader of the church in Jerusalem and eventually wrote this letter.
Mm-hmm. You talk about, what would it take for me to believe my brother's God, right? Or any brother's God.
And we love Daniel.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you think about it, and for anybody, really, anybody close to you, you watch them live, right, mm-hmm. more than you sometimes hear them speak sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? And so with James, I mean, this book is practical, very practical, you know, more so than it is. I mean, there's deep theology within it, you know, but the way he lays it out is practical. It's almost like he's watching Jesus do this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's watching Jesus. And so, you know, what would it take for me to believe my brother is Christ is to see him act out these things that he preaches, you know, practice what he preaches.
And I'm kind of glad that you did say that. And I had this that I wanted to mention kind of later on, but I'm going to go ahead and mention it just because this was something that I'd never really thought of before that kind of stood out to me. But how you had said it's all about, you know, what it would take for you is seeing the actions of Jesus done. And, you know, later we're going to be getting into this, you know, whole faith and works debate, you know, because in it's chapter two, when we go into the faith and works, right? So in chapter two in James, he kind of digs into this faith and works aspect. And I don't want to necessarily be skipping along, but just like you said that, it's just like, man, I have to get this out there because this is something I really want to get across and I really don't want to forget it, honestly. But it's so rich because I remember thinking, you know, this concept of faith and this works, and you know, how does this work, and what is the correlation between these two things? And I remember a guy saying one time that we have to do something that's in according to our faith. Our faith causes action that's in our lives. Mm-hmm. Okay, is it evident? Our works is evidence of our faith. But one example that he uses of it, and which is another reason why I thought it was so cool, is because we just did a study on this of Andy Stanley's. But when John the Baptist was in prison. He's hopeless. He's lost his hope, like a lot of us have in this world today. He's lost his hope. And so he sends some of the disciples. The disciples are meeting with him, and they write letters back and forth, and they go up, and you know, they're seeing him, and John's like, yo, go, I need you to deliver a message to Jesus for me. And they're like, I bet, what is it? And so he tells them, and like they just stand there and look at him, and like, you sure you want us to deliver this message to Jesus? Like, this might tick him off. I mean, I don't know, how's he going to react to this? Okay, and so, but what he tells him is, he's like, I need to know, are you the one? Are you the Messiah? Are you the one that they said was coming?
Or are we waiting for another?
Or are we waiting for another? He was confused because he was so hopeless. He was lost in his situation at a time that he didn't know. But what's cool about this is the reply that Jesus sends back to the disciples. So the disciples come back to Jesus and they're like, listen, Jesus, don't shoot the messenger. John's the one asking, your cousin. Okay, he's the one asking here. But he wants to know, are you in Rome or not? And Jesus is like, what? And he's like, he wants to know, are you the one that they said was coming? And so Jesus doesn't be like, yeah, I've said it 100 times. You've seen me. You've watched me. I've said it 100 times. All he simply says, he says, go back to John and tell him, you've seen the things I've done.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
The blind see, the lame walk.
The blind see, the lame walk. You've seen the things that I've done. Okay, and so even Jesus himself is like the greatest depiction of this faith and works because he himself was shown and proven in what he had done. Obviously, his faith was there. This was Jesus, the Son of God. He is God himself. He had more faith than any of us combined. His faith was there. But yet, the thing that he goes to take back to John to I guess, you know, prove himself, and he lets John answer the question. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't say, you've seen what I've done, or you this and that, blah, 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 blah. He says, you know what's happened. You make the decision. Have you seen enough to be proven? And so they take this message back to John, and John's obviously, you know, I mean, this has been an awakening moment because John's like, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the Son of God because I've seen it. I've seen the works. I've seen the works of God. And so even in Jesus, we see this correlation between faith and works. And so, and I hate to skip along, you know, because chapter one, we'll go back to chapter one.
But that actually jumps into chapter one.
It does because the trials.
It actually jumps in, yeah, because he was undergoing a trial. And that was the thing about John is like, again, if you remember the scriptures and you remember the narrative there, Jesus lets John die.
Right, yeah.
He lets him be murdered.
It doesn't
bust him out of prison, like, you know, like Peter gets delivered miraculously from prison later, you know, and all this stuff, you know, he lets John get beheaded. He leaves him there in prison.
Yeah.
But he gives him that answer, and I think, you know, I really do think that John probably did not end his life in despair.
Because, I mean, you know, you talk about these first three verses, well, the verses 2 through 4, you know, it says, count it joy when you meet these various trials, mm-hmm. for the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And it goes on to say that steadfastness in full effect is perfect, complete, and lacking nothing. And I looked up the word steadfastness because I wanted to get a better grip on what that word means. And it says constant, firm, and unwavering.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, John.
Like endurance.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, that firm and constant is like, with this, obviously, we're not going to have, I mean, we're going to have times where we doubt, you know, mm-hmm. there's no objecting that, you know, but like, that could be the testing of our faith, and when we get through that doubt season, you know, then that produces some steadfastness, you
Absolutely.
Know, because instead of being callous and be like, you know, I just don't know if I believe this anymore, and shutting it down, you're like questioning, you're like, do I really believe this? You know?
Yeah.
And why do I really believe this?
Which I think it's kind of cool because if you remember at the beginning of last year, kind of a big underlying theme for our church and some of us around here, and this is before we knew about the coronavirus stuff, this is before this broke out, but like a big underlying theme was endurance. And I didn't realize until just now, but like, that's kind of cool how God works. Like we had, you know, a month or two of services that were strictly just endurance, 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 running the race. It's going to be hard. And you're going to be trials and you're going to have suffering. But it's
yeah,
just
I remember
endurance,
specifically
endurance.
Preaching on.
Yeah, you
I
did a service.
I remember specifically preaching on.
Miles,
we were talking.
Like
yeah,
that.
We were talking about, you know, like vision being cast, and because everybody was, you know, vision 2020. Yeah, that didn't work out. but.
Maybe
I mean, yeah, not the vision we were, not what we were thinking, not what we were hyping up exactly. You know what I mean? Like God's vision, obviously, God is going to fulfill His will,
right.
And that's the thing. Just like we read here in James, is that it's going to test your faith and produce that endurance. It may be not be the maturity the way you thought it was going to come about, but it will come about. And we specifically talked about that if you're going to see the vision through to the end, if you're going to see the vision fulfilled, you have to have endurance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to have this, like, perseverance. That's the difference in seeing a vision fulfilled or a vision killed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was your main point was, and you referenced the football game.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was
I think we were coming off around Super
like
Bowl
that.
Time.
Yeah, it was Super Bowl time. Yeah, and you were like the pass.
Or maybe it was college championship. I don't know.
No, it was Super Bowl. It was Super Bowl.
Was it?
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah.
I couldn't remember if it was January or February.
The pass is thrown. The ball is caught, and then it's like, what's next? Like, you caught the ball.
Yeah, you caught the vision.
You caught the vision. Mm-hmm. What do you know next? And then, like, you preach this whole sermon on endurance. But I just think that that's cool that how that works, because I didn't realize it until just now. But, like, looking back in hindsight, I see how I believe God was preparing a lot of hearts for that message coming into 2020. Because mm-hmm. we needed endurance in 2020. You know, we've faced the trials. We've faced the suffering in 2020, and
I was preached that and said those words, like, thinking normal life trials. And then 2020 hits, and it's like,
oh, but I just thought that was cool. I mean, I hate to, you know, if y'all don't know me, man, I got ADHD, okay, so I branch off in a million different directions. But he said that, and I was like, oh man, endurance. I was like, and it just clicked with me. I was like, that's so cool. I was like, back in 2020, all these problems. Like, and I remember you preaching on endurance in the beginning of 2020 and pushing us through that. But I just thought that was cool. So, I mean, Calvin, I like where you was going with that, with your the trials and stuff. But that was...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the endurance, I could see endurance being replaced with a genuineness of faith, you know, mm-hmm. in this case, in the Christian walk. Because, you know, when you talk about tests, you know, we have tests and trials. And rephrase it. Tests measure the genuineness of your knowledge, right?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you take tests in school,
yes.
Is your knowledge, you know, are you just mm-hmm. regurgitating right. it? You know, these standardized tests, you can't just regurgitate every form.
Right, you got to know the material.
Yep. Trials, tests. I mean, trials measure the genuineness of innocence, you know, in some cases. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yep. And so with these tests and trials, what God's, you know, sometimes I look at tests and trials, I'm like, why in the world would God do that? You know, why mm-hmm. would God allow someone to go through something hard in life? You know, why wouldn't, and we can ask that sometimes.
You see that genuine faith when it hits the fan, you see that genuine faith mm-hmm. peek through. Because
yeah.
if you've just skated by, if you've cheated on all the tests, you know, being metaphorically here, if you've cheated on all the tests and if you've studying.
If you're just a cultural Christian, I guess if we could use that phrase.
Right, yeah, yeah.
If you just go to church because it's the thing to do and your family expects it of you, you've kind of skated by
people. And when the storm hits, do you thrive? I mean, because that's the test. That's the test right there. And so do you pass it? Do you look back on the other side and you're like, I stayed faithful. I didn't lose my cool. I didn't get mad. I didn't quit my job. I didn't yell at my mom or my dad, or I didn't, whatever the case may be. Did I win that battle? And you look back on it, and there are some battles that you say, you know, no, I didn't. And so you realize that you were unprepared for that battle, in a sense of that is a test of your genuine faith. That's where does your faith lie? I think that's really cool. That was a really good analogy. I like that.
And like, you know, it's worth noting that failing a test or trial is not the end of the world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think back to this past...
Yeah, if any of you are our honors kids or really brainy academics out there, it's okay to make a B.
Exactly.
It's actually okay to fail a test even, but it's definitely okay to make a B.
I remember I studied 20 hours for a test about this time last year.
Yeah.
And I made it 26 on it. And I was like...
Out of
100.
Okay.
Out of 100. Like,
I was going to be like, come on, Cal. It's only out of like 35. You didn't do too bad.
No. I did all.
Out of 100.
And so, but when it came down to the finals time, I remembered that material better than I remembered any other because drilled myself.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so, like,
That's actually true for me in college as well.
Yeah.
Especially like in chemistry. I loved chemistry, but some of the tests were really hard. And those midterm tests, everything I missed on those, you better believe I got right on the final.
Yeah.
And that was honestly what I knew the best.
And I think that's really important to not miss the little test.
Yeah.
Okay. When it's, if it's something as simple as just, in the car, and I'm a bad road rager, okay? So this is not, you know, this is when you're in the car and nobody else is with you, and somebody cuts you off, you know, and you're like beating your steering wheel, like you're yelling or something or whatever. Like, even though like the person ahead of you, even if you don't honk the horn, if the person ahead of you doesn't even know, but it's like you just kind of lost your cool in the car, and you're the only person that knows about it, you know, other than God, obviously, you're the only person that knows about it. Like, that's still like one of those mini tests. You know, because
you got to be honest with yourself.
Yeah, because you got to be honest
like,
with yourself.
That came from somewhere. Exactly. It wasn't just random.
Exactly. And so it's like those mini tests. But you have those mini tests are important, and you have to watch out for them, because those mini tests are what build you up to. Because when you fail those, you can look back and you go, okay, well, you know what? That didn't damage my reputation too bad. That didn't damage my, you know, whatever the case may be, my relationships with people. That didn't damage the love that I have for people, the hope that I have for people. That didn't damage anything because I was alone. Let me learn from that until next time.
Yeah, take advantage of the tests when the stakes are low.
Yes, yes. Because and that's what you need to do. So it's about the tests, and there are different, you know, wages of tests and different sizes of tests. But make sure that whenever you get those low scoring tests, you know, the tests that don't matter as much.
Yeah.
In the small time, make sure that you don't just overlook them and just, oh well, I lost my
like
car
I just
today.
Got blue pen on my white hoodie. And, like, how am I going to handle that?
He just flipped a table, guys.
Am I going to freak out and flip the table? Or is it going to be okay, you know? But and I like what Caleb talked about John earlier. You know, John's literally just stuck in a prison cell, John the Baptist. And he has all this going on. And he goes and he asks Jesus. And Jesus didn't rebuke him or be harsh to him. Be like, oh, you got such little faith. He gave him an answer. But John couldn't see past the prison cell. Everything had kind of closed. He had allowed the trials and the circumstances and things to kind of close in around him. And what James does is he comes along here, and he's a dude that has understood this suffering. He's not speaking just, oh, this is nice preacher talk because I'm the brother of Jesus. Like, I've been through it. Mm-hmm. Don't let your circumstances shrink your life down and shrink your vision down to where all you see is the prison cell. In verse 5, he says, this is still in chapter 1, he says, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives to all generously and without criticizing, and it will be given to him. Jesus didn't criticize, right? He didn't criticize John. He gave him wisdom. He gave him the perspective that he needed to be able to see it. And I think that's an aspect, a component of that wisdom that James is talking about there, is the perspective you need to continue to endure so that you can be made mature and complete.
Mm-hmm. I think it's worth noting, just very quickly. James goes on.
It
doesn't
have to be quickly.
No, sorry. James goes on to say that God doesn't tempt. That's an important distinction to kind of make with this, is God's not the one providing that temptation, right? He allows you to be tempted for these purposes of producing steadfastness, but he makes it no. I mean, he says God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. It says, but each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. So that goes back to our heart issue. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It goes back to what we're pursuing in life, and, you know, and the steadfastness is produced when we, instead of pursuing that thing, right, that our heart is, that's luring our heart, is we submit ourselves to God, or even if we do, are enticed, we, in what it says in chapter 4, verses 7 and 8, submit to God. And the Satan will flee from us.
Yeah.
And that's because there's a difference between trials and temptation. There's a difference between trials and temptation, okay?
Yeah.
Trials can come from God. God can put trials, because, you know, the Bible says that all things work together for the good of God and the glory of Him. All things work together for the good of Him. And so those trials, those are things that are put in place for you. Those are those mini tests that are put in place for you that He puts there because He knows you're going to fail them, but He wants you to look back on them and learn from them so you don't miss the big test.
I think of Joseph. Back in Genesis, when we read about Joseph, and it's like, I wouldn't necessarily say that God caused him to be sold into slavery, but he sure did allow it. Mm-hmm. And I think he sure kind of like set limits on it and kind of nudged it along and kind of guided it along the way, almost like a shepherd with a staff, you know, like I'm going to kind of nudge this in my direction. These people, it's their own evil desires that are causing them to sell their brother into slavery, to, you know, conspire to kill him, and then, okay, we'll just sell him to slavery. And it was Potiphar's wife's own desires that led to, you know, her attempting to have an affair with Joseph and everything. All of these circumstances. And yet in the end, God used him to save two nations. Mm-hmm. And multiple people.
And that's because he uses the situations that are already happening. Their brothers made the bad decision to toss him in that, but God chose to let that, you know, little, I guess, like little caravan or whatever. The traveler. He's the one that, you know, whatever, however they got there, however they came across him, I truly believe it was God ordained that he set them on the path to go by Joseph, because that is where God said, I'm going to use this situation that's already occurring. You know, that's, it's already occurring. I'm going to use this situation to make a test, to make a trial, to make something that is going to be looked back on that you can pass, that's going to be better for you in your future. Because all things work together for the good of God.
And again, it's that, it comes back to that whole endurance aspect. You know, he would have been, what, 19?
Yeah, very young, yeah.
20 when that happens, and it's like, it's not another 10, 15 years before he's really risen. Mm-hmm. To the final position where we're like, oh yeah, this is a great part of the story, and he's in control, mm-hmm. and God's really used it. And God was using him the whole time. And for me, like, that's something I really have to remind myself a lot of, because I'm like, okay, like, what's going on in life right now? Like, what good thing is actually occurring or whatever? But, like, we never know. And, like, our greatest success may be somebody that we lead. Maybe somebody that we influence in life, not necessarily something that we do ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and so some days I have to remind myself, oh, it's like, I got two young kids at home. I have no idea what they're going to do when they grow up.
Yeah.
But neither did, you know, Billy Graham's parents. You know, and so it's like, you got to be faithful in those small things and recognize that there's a greater purpose and a greater story occurring along the way.
Right, yeah.
And be able to have that wisdom to continue in the endurance.
Yeah.
Which I like. Cal mentioned a verse earlier. What was that? 26, 27, something like that. At the end of chapter 1, something. He mentioned a verse I really liked earlier. Would you read that? Whatever you.
Yeah. So it's just talking about the religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
If anyone thinks he's which is 26 and 27 of chapter 1. If anyone thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God is this: to visit the orphans, widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. When I think of James, I think of practicality, and I was thinking on the way here, I was thinking another word I think of is radical, you know, because he uses some big words here. This person's religion is worthless if he doesn't do these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a hard-hitting word to hear. Yeah. I mean, if you hear something's worthless, then that's like kind of the lowest.
Oh, level, yeah, the lowest, you know? Yeah.
I mean, that's like...
You failed the test.
Unusable, right? Yeah. But, you know, pure and undefiled, those are also on the opposite ends of the spectrum. You know what I'm saying? And I've always found it interesting that to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world, that's the definition of pure religion. You know, those two simple things. And they seem simple, right? Until you kind of talk, I mean, you know, these practicality, and it is simple, right? It's simple to do these practical things. But the theology behind each one of these.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Which stands on love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Help the helpless and be pure.
Which I'd heard. That's... Because when you first mentioned that, you know, when we first got talking about that, and we... Oh, just the love of God. The love of God. What does that mean? And I thought that was really cool because we're kind of in the middle of this topic of trials and, you know, our sinfulness and then the love of God. And... You know, there is a bridge between these things, and when you read that, you're talking about like this love of God and just how powerful it is and how much his love is. And I just remember going back in Matthew, you know, where the people come up to him and they're asking, you know, what's the greatest laws of these? He's like, love the Lord God your Father with all the heart, soul, and strength of mind. And I heard a concept about this the other day that I hadn't thought of before, but when I read it and when I heard it, it was extremely eye-opening. I've never really necessarily thought about it before, but the presence of sin is the lack of loving God.
Mm.
The presence of sin is the lack of loving God, is the lack of love of God and the lack of just in general love in your life. Because sin separates us from God, obviously. But if that sinfulness that's in our lives, if we truly, like, and this goes back to kind of like that faith and works thing that we first kind of started off with in chapter 2. With our faith is real, okay? If we have real faith and we produce real evidence. We produce real action from that faith. Mm-hmm. Okay, and part of that is, you know, our fruits of the Spirit, and one major aspect of that is our love, because that's one thing that God commands us to do. I don't remember, it was actually our verse of the day for the YouVersion app, which if you guys don't have that, highly recommend the YouVersion app.
Yep, YouVersion.
It's an awesome app. Plenty of stuff on it. You guys have plans, reading plans, different kind of Bible versions. And
more, send more you than a daily you could ever app. Possibly
oh,
read.
It is awesome. It's so good. But today it actually sent us one, and I don't actually, I think it was from maybe Mark or something.
I think it's John 13:35.
Yeah, it was John, that's what it was. Yeah, actually, because I sent a group text to my guys this morning and sent it to them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's John 13:35. By this, everyone would know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Talking about that love, like you have to love. If you want to be known as a follower of Christ, if you want to be a known of a disciple of Christ, you have to have love. So where is your love? Like what happens when, you know, when we talked about in those trials? In those trials, where is your love? In your faith, where is your love? In your works, where is your love? Because any of it without love is dead. You know, and the same, you have to have love because it's all a basis of love. It's all a foundation. It all branches off of love. And it comes back to that thought of just like, if you love God, if you truly have like that love for Christ in your heart, like it keeps you from sin. It keeps you from all sin. And so like the thought of like sin is the lack of love for God. And knowing that God commands me, like that his number one command is that I love him with all of my heart, soul, and strength of mind. Mm-hmm. That makes sin a humongous deal, okay? Because we belittle
sin.
Also,
really, I think that kind of illustrates the difference in the kind of definition of love that you have in Scripture. It's not an emotion.
Right.
When we talk about love in today's society, it's often very emotion-driven. It's kind of this more of this passion, right. this lust. How do you command somebody to love you?
Right, you can't.
Right, that just sounds desperate.
Mm-hmm.
Love me, please. Like that just, but no. But he says, no, you do it. I'm commanding you, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. It's a command to love. It's an action. And that's not desperation. That's for your own good.
Yeah.
Because he's the highest thing there is.
And when you get a hold, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying. It's like when you get a hold of that, like, that convicts me. Like, that hurts me, like, deep in my core. Like, to think, like, even the smallest drop of sin in my life is direct proof that, like, there's a lack of love
for God. There's a lack of actionable love in
my life. It's a lack of actionable love for Christ in my heart. Like, that hurts. Like, that should hurt all of us. If you're a Christian and you're listening to this, when you sin in your life, no matter what that may be, no matter how big, no matter how small, no matter how many times, remember that whenever you sin, whenever you realize that you're in sin, remember like the fact of like that presence of sin is in essence as an area of your life that lacks the proper love for
yeah,
God.
It's in those moments I choose to love myself more than I choose to love God.
Ooh, and that, I mean, that hurts, man. That
because it's that's what it's all driven by is by self and pride.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, if it's an outburst of anger, it's a pride issue. You know what I mean? If it's looking at pornography or drinking too much or eating too much, whatever. It's something I'm trying to satisfy my desires. I'm trying to take care of me above my love for God.
Hmm.
And you know, when he talks about, you know, the first commandment, love the Lord your God, you know, and then he goes, the second is likewise, love others as yourself and love your neighbors as yourself. And then so when you talk about, you know, these things convoluting our hearts, right? These, you know, all these sins that we allow ourselves, that convolutes our love for God, but it also convolutes our love for others, you know?
Yes.
And it moves, you know, as we, like in James, in the second chapter, starting in verse 14, we start talking about what faith, you know, if we love God, we're going to be faithful to him, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to have faith in somebody we love, you know? So if I'm in a relationship and I love somebody, I'm going to have faith that person's going to do the right thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, it's going to be reciprocated, and that's what happens, you know? And so God, what makes this relationship between us and God is so awesome is that, you know, I have faith and I know that God's going to do the right thing, but he has no guarantee I'm going to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what that leap of faith with Jesus was, you know? But when he goes on into verse 14 of chapter 2, he's talking about faith without works, right? If we have faith, it's impossible not to have works with that.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Act of faith. And so he says, what good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith and not works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking daily food, and one of you goes and says, go in peace, be warmed and filled, without giving them the things that they need for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But if someone will say, you have faith and I have works, show me faith apart from your works, and I will show you my faith by my works.
Mm-hmm. We could pull up and park there the rest of the time. if we could.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that James takes it there immediately. He says, all right, we want to talk about what's real faith, what's real faith. And immediately, he ties it to other people. Mm-hmm. If you have real faith in Jesus, that's going to really affect how you live out your life with other people. Because if I have a real relationship with somebody, I not only care about them, but I care about the people that they care about. Mm-hmm. If you want to get on my bad side, mistreat my wife, mistreat my kids. You know, mm-hmm. Caleb's married, got a kid on the way. Cal's got a fiance. I mean, that would be the quickest way to tick any of us off is mess with our woman.
Yeah.
You know, and that looking at us, it's like, okay, James is like, well, if we're just going to say go in peace, keep warm, eat well, and you don't give them what the body needs, what good does it do? Why are we not taking care of these people? Mm-hmm. Because they are loved and they are cherished by God. If you have a faith that's real, a faith that would save you, you're going to take care of those that God loves.
Right. And that's where the catch is right there, because I know people get confused on this, you know, essence of faith and works and so forth. How much faith? How much works? Which one comes, you know, before which one? And what does this happen? Your faith, and so in essence, this can be basically brought back to that verse of love the Lord mm-hmm. and love your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Your faith is love the Lord. Your neighbor is your works, okay? And in essence, he says the number one first command is love the Lord thy God thy Father. So your number one command is your faith, okay? In essence, if you'll stay with me here, the second being love your neighbor is your works, your outward works towards your neighbor. And so you cannot have proper works towards your neighbor unless you are properly fermented in your love for Christ, because it's through your love for Christ that you love your neighbor. Mm-hmm. That is where the love for your neighbor comes from, because without the love for Christ, you have no love for your neighbor. Okay? Because that's why you have so many people that are on social media that have nothing to do with God. They're not Christians. They don't want nothing to do with them. But yet they go out and spend millions of dollars feeding the homeless people, and you know they get praised for it on social media. Okay, and like that's great and that's awesome. But they're not doing that out of love for Christ. They're doing that out of just pure. I mean, honestly, most of it's probably just for the views on Instagram. Some of it's publicity. For publicity, you know, and some of it might be genuine. But whatever the case may be, it's dead either way. If you do it one way or the other, it's dead. But if you have it together, if you have that unity, well, because that's the thing,
they may do it out of a genuine concern. Oh, maybe it honestly breaks their heart and they want to see good for these people. That is wonderful. But it doesn't mean anything at the end of their life without Jesus. Nobody
without Jesus. It does nothing for them. If you give them food, if you give them a place to eat, and you don't share Jesus with them, you didn't do nothing. And you showed them love, that's great, but you didn't show them love through Jesus. And so therefore, the only thing that you did was prolong the inevitable of their death and their sin. Because if they're in sin, if they're in death, it was your job as a Christian to show them the love of Jesus, in which the only way that you can do that is if you are portraying that action through the love of Jesus. So if you are rooted in the love of Jesus yourself, and you go and show that love of Jesus to others, then that has a lasting effect. That has a ripple effect. That has a change. That actually means something because it's eternal. You know, you've changed that person's life forever. Not only that, but you've blessed your own life because in that you've experienced more love for Christ. Yeah. You know, but if you do it out of emptiness, it stops at a dead end wall. You've helped that person, and it stops at a dead end wall because when they die, your genuineness didn't go anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Like whenever they die, whenever that stops, if they didn't receive Christ, then that genuineness didn't go anywhere because it's only through the love of Christ and through the genuineness of Christ, when we truly fall in love with Him and then love people through it, that it maintains a lasting and permeable effect.
And I think, you know, you can go back to first, and we can go forward, I guess, to 1 Peter 4:8, in which he says, above all, overall, love.
Above everything.
Continue in your love, because love covers a multitude of sins.
Yes.
And as, like, even up until, I mean, you know, even till now, really, I struggle to, like, you know, decipher what that means. Cause I'm like, how does love cover? I thought repentance covers sin. But like, if you think about it, if you're loving others, you've had to repent because you had to have a right heart to love others. You know what I'm saying? You're not loving others to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
And if you're loving God, if you're loving God and loving others through God, you're in a continual state of repentance and, you know, renewing that. And it's just.
And I even think about that in a sense of like, you'll choose to forgive and you won't truly forget because we're not wired that way. We can't as human beings just actually forget, but you can sure pretend to forget. You'll forgive and pretend to forget. And that's love covering a multitude of sins, not just your own, but even of the people that you're actually loving.
Yeah.
You know, it's not absolving them of sin. It's not taking away their sin that only Jesus can do, but it's bringing the relationships back together, not letting sin rip it apart. It's covering it in that way.
Which in result, eventually you forget. Whenever you mend that relationship, whenever, even if it's hard at first, and say, I forgive this person, I'm going to love them. It hurts. It still hurts.
Yeah, there's a difference in forgiving and forgetting. I've heard some people say before that, you know, basically it's not real forgiveness if you're still remembering it. But that's just not the case.
No, it's not true.
You can't do that.
Well, what happens is when you forgive, the remembering becomes less significant. You know, it becomes less of a significant impact on your own heart.
And exactly, over time it'll fade. But in the initial, especially if it was a big, big hurt, a big, big wrong done to you, it's like a daily, sometimes hourly choice. And I'm gonna forgive.
And that may be something that may be a trial that God's allowing you to go through. It's like here's something that I've went through, and you may wonder why am I going through that.
Yes.
But it may be so that you can have that testimony to someone else who has that, because. You know, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10:13, no temptation is overtaking you that's not common to man, right? So the temptation to just hold that, you know, hold that grudge, you know, that trial could be producing something in you that, you know, that steadfastness, what he talks about, that, you know, I'm going to forgive and I'm going to allow God to change my heart because I can't change it. You know, there's nothing I can do to rip this away, you know, and you're just going to have to trust God with it. And over time, the love that you have for others will eclipse that. Yeah.
And James moves on into this, and even going into chapter 5, and I love how he does this because this seems to be a recurring theme throughout the whole Bible, the whole New Testament specifically, and we've talked about this many times in the last few podcasts, this idea of humility and this idea of thankfulness, okay? And he ends this the exact same way that the last time we've talked about, you know, Colossians and Philippians, he ends it in the same exact way. Thankfulness. And so it says, is anyone, this is 5:13, is anyone among you suffering? He should pray. Is anyone cheerful? He should sing praises. Is anyone among you sick? He should call for the elders of the church, and they should pray over him after anointing him with olive oil in the name of the Lord. They pray, they sing praises, they worship, and they give thanks to God. So at the end of the day, he's bringing it all back in. He's bringing it all back in here. He's saying, like, no matter what, if you're hurting, if you're sick, if you've been lost, if your faith isn't where it shouldn't have been, if you've been putting your works over your faith or vice versa or whatever the case may be, get back to the basics. Get back. If you're sick, if you're broken, if you're needy, pray, sing praises. Get back to God. God, give like this thankfulness. He brings it back to this idea of thankfulness and prayer to God. I think that's really cool because we see that as a recurring theme for the last couple. Books that
and somebody who is humble in heart and who is thankful and grateful, that influences how they treat other people, and it really influences the way they speak about and speak to other people. You know, that we control our tongue, and that's actually a big theme in chapter 3. I encourage you to go, we're not going to dive super deep into it, but go back and read that on your own time. And it's one of those things, if you are a believer and you really do have real faith and you're progressing in that and you're allowing, like we talked about last time, big word, sanctification to occur by the Spirit, how you talk will change, how you speak to people. And then kind of the very last, I look at literally the very last verse here in James.
I was going to say that next.
I love that Cal mentioned, you know, continuing love, putting on love above all, because love covers a multitude of sins. We hear that phrase again here in verse 20 of chapter 5 in James. Actually, I'm going to back up and read 19. He says, my brothers, if any among you strays from the truth and someone turns him back, he should know that whoever turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his life from death and cover a multitude of sins. And I think that's not something different than the verse from First Peter?
Yeah, First Peter 4:8.
It's First Peter 4:8. That's not something different. That's that love in action. It is at times a bit of a tough love. If you're all truth and no love, that's like brutality. Mm-hmm. But if you're all what you think is love and you never tell the truth, that's not real love. Mm-hmm. It's actually hypocrisy.
Yeah, you're hurting them more so than you are doing anything.
I mean, you know, some of the greatest love is the hardest love to do. Like, mm-hmm. if I have a brother of mine, you know what I'm saying? If I have, not
sorry, Daniel.
Yeah, not necessarily. Hey, bro. Yeah, not necessarily my, what is the word?
I hope biological. He's listening. We've given him 2 shout-outs already.
I know. He needs to be. Yeah, but, yeah, Daniel, if you're out there, clean your room or something. I'm just kidding. His room's cleaner than mine. Anyways. If I have a brother of mine who's straying from the word, straying from the church, that's going to, one, as a Christian, if I'm following God, that's going to hurt my heart. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have a family member who's not saved, that's going to hurt my heart I know the truth, you know, but it's also someone I'm most intimate with, you know what I'm saying? Someone that, like, one of my friends that who I've just spoken with more, who I'm more familiar with, who probably knows me better, you know, mm-hmm. and some of those are the hardest ones to reach, but those are the greatest forms of love, you know, is the hardest ones. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, here I envision church members, I envision family mm-hmm. members, I envision family members who probably reject them, you know?
Yeah.
Who may have, you know, as Jesus said, have heard the word, but it doesn't take root in their heart. You know, I've heard it initially, then leave, and then, you know, come to the realization. Anyways, that greatest love is the hardest love sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
That recognition.
And I think that has to come from a place of relationship. You know, if you go to a large church what average church size in America is technically only like, what, 70, 75? Mm. It's actually pretty small. So we're sort of a large church, even though we don't think of ourselves that big. Yeah. But even a church our size, or, you know, if you're in a church of 500 or 1,000 or more than that, this is not random Christian from church comes up to me, founds out what happened, and they're like, hey, I'm real worried about you. You need to stop. Somebody that you have a relationship
right,
with.
Right, yes,
you
know what I mean? Relational.
It says, my brothers, if any among you strays from truth, this is close, it's personal, right, it's intimate. This is somebody that is in relationship with this person that is saying, I love you enough, and I have shown my love in my actions over time enough to present you with this truth that, you know, something needs to change.
Right. Well, I mean, listen, I love the book of James. You guys know that. I've mentioned it so many times before, and I'm glad we were able to hit on it. I'm sure it's probably going to get hit on again. I mean, we literally, like...
We'll come back to dissect a specific theme.
Like, chapter 1 and 2 basically was all we got to, and we just started running out of time. And so, we're going to come back on it. We were going to go over chapter 3, but big surprise, we're going to be doing a cool series coming up. Actually 2 different series. We're going to be doing a series on worth coming up, okay? And then we're going to be doing another series over kind of what chapter 3 is. So if you guys want to know what that's about, go check out chapter 3 for a little insight. But even in itself, you guys need to read it for yourself anyways. James, chapters 1 through 5. Go over check
it's
them
short.
Out. It's very short. We've been feeding you guys the easy stuff. We've been giving you the baby milk, okay? It's short chapters. Colossians, Philippians are both 4 chapters long. James is 5, okay? Mm-hmm. Short stuff. Go read them for
James
yourself.
James is short, but man, if we would do it, it would absolutely transform the church.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. James, that's why I was saying that it's so cool. And I don't mean to like be diving back in, but when you said that earlier about James being the half-brother of Jesus... I think it's pretty cool that the half-brother of Jesus, somebody that you would think would have the most to say about Jesus and theology and biblical, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, he would have the most to say, writes a book that's only 6 chapters or 5 chapters long. Yeah. Like, that's pretty remarkable. That should say something about the church. That should say something about what it means to be a Christian.
Well, yeah, and he wrote with the purpose of writing to Christians. You know what I mean? It wasn't like he sat down, oh, I'm going to write down my memoirs of my life with Jesus or this and that. He says, nah, that's not what they need. They need me to be personal. They need me to be intimate and explain things to them in a letter that they can look back on.
Right. Oh, yeah. And he keeps it simple. He keeps it practical. And this is the book of James is something that you need to read, and you need to read it with an open heart because it will transform your life. It will transform the way that you live your life. It will transform the way that you treat people and the way that those people treat people and the way that you make disciples and the way that you put action into your faith. It'll change.
The epitome of crosswalk.
It is the epitome of crosswalk. And that is why it's probably something we're going to continuously come back to, because that is literally, that is crosswalk. That's where we came from. That's what we want. That is our main goal to get out, is just like keep just like pressing that of just real faith meets real life. Real faith meets real life. This is what it means to have that real faith and that real love and that real trust and hope in Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. It's been awesome. I love talking to you guys. Thank you, Calvin, for joining us back on another podcast. Hopefully we can get him back again one of these days. I love having him. He hit me up and he was saying, hey, I got to head out soon. If you want to do one, we can do one. So we made it happen. I'm glad to have him in one more time before he goes back to do some more college stuff and whatnot. But it's been great. Read James for yourself. We love you guys. Thank you guys for joining in for Crosswalk, where real faith meets real life. Thank you guys.